This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
But Schuster, formerly of The Score, formerly of ESPN 1000, Schuster's been around, and both those guys worked with Les a ton, and both of these guys hung out with Les too, hung out with him, you know, off air as well. So those two guys may have known Les better than any of us did. So it was no surprise to me that I had an unbelievable conversation with Bruce Levine and David Schuster.
Was it you or Bruce just now that said you feel like he's going to pop back up any minute now?
I don't think there's any question. One of these days in a press box, you know, we're going to go to the back of the press box where there's food or something like that. And Les is just going to be there snarfing it down. There's no question. He's going to be there one of these days. I feel his presence. I do. I honestly do.
Do you agree with that, Bruce?
Les was such a unique character that in some ways, the animation of his life was, you know, always there. So David's right. There was nothing that was regular about Les other than having a big heart and being just a wonderful person all the way down. If there was ever a problem that anybody had, or if there was anything that wasn't working in their life, Les was always there with a pat on the back, and a smile, and a helping hand. He just was one of the nicest, warmest people. But when that wasn't going on, he was a robot. You know, he was just, he was always on.
Yeah, he was always on. And David,
what was he on?
First of all, he hated drugs. He hated alcohol. Okay. You know, he despised anything like that. I think, you know, he was on like Coca-Cola and whatever else. I mean, he was just, you know, he was just an amazing individual with such a capacity for remembering things, for forgetting things, and then remembering he forgot them.
Yeah, he was Rain Man. There's no question. Leslie was definitely Rain Man. Although, we had fact checked him, and you know, we would say, Les, you weren't right about that. Oh, yeah, yes, I was. No, you really weren't right about that. And so that would be a topic of conversation to just sort of whiplash him for about a half hour on that.
All right, where I am forever going to try to figure this out, and maybe I've asked you guys this either on or off the air, and I actually don't even know exactly how to phrase the question, but I will try my best here. What made Les, like, he is a one-of-one unique character who, to me, I always say that he never lost
the spirit of his 12-year-old fan. And sometimes it was really good and helped him and was perfect. Sometimes it came across as immature with some of the things that he would say on the radio and some of the, I know you are, but what am I sort of banter that would go on with Les. But I am forever trying to figure out, like, where did it all come from?
Well, first of all, you might be exaggerating on the age. 12 might be a little bit. 12 might be a little high bar, honestly. No, I mean, listen, we both love Les. I mean, I don't think, along with Bruce, I don't think any of anybody associated with him more than I did. I mean, I was with him in studio. I was with him in press boxes. I was with him traveling on the road, you know, softball games, what have you. So I think I, you know, knew Les about as well as anybody other than maybe people in his family or his longtime girlfriend, Kathy. You know, Les is just absolutely unique. I mean, he was everywhere. What's the character? And is it the Woody Allen movie, Bruce Zelig, or whoever it is? You know, the person who's always everywhere. You know, that was Les. Les was unique. He got to places that I don't know how he got to, meaning traveling. I mean, he would go. He must have had enough. As I said, you know, even during his eulogy, he must have had enough. I'm laughing in advance. He had enough frequent flyer miles to go to Pluto, his favorite planet. Oh, it wasn't a planet for him. Sorry.
So the best day of Les's life, other than his son being born, was I remember him covering a early game in Milwaukee, White Sox and Brewers, and then a Cub game later on in the day, an early evening game. But I do remember him saying that he covered three games in one day, including a Bulls game. And he did a voicer from all three events. So White Sox game in Milwaukee, Cub game at home, and a basketball game at Chicago Stadium. But that was the best day of Les's life that he could say he did that. And he reveled in the fact that he could be at three places one day. I mean, was, I've never seen more joy for him than being able to do that. The guy went through cars like, I don't know, he would put on $40,000 miles a year sometimes. And that's, man. That was him. He was perpetual motion.
Yeah, he was. Again, the frequent flyer miles traveling around the country. I don't think he ever paid a dime for any airline. He taught me things, you know, and you as well, Bruce. He taught us how to, I hate to use the terminology, but to take advantage of, you know, of the landscape, you know, to travel for as little, if not no money at all. I mean, one of my all-time stories was, and this is when my children were real young, and I was going to, what's the roller coaster park in Ohio by Cleveland? Cedar Point, right. And I said, Les, I'm, you know, taking off about 3 days. I'm going to go to Cedar Point, you know, with my kids. He goes, well, are you paying anything? I go, well, yeah, I guess I am. Well, why? He goes, well, you know, and he got on the phone and he called up the place and he said, my friend, and I was working at ESPN at the time. He goes, my friend is coming and he's going to do a story on Cedar Point, yada, yada, yada. And he talked it into me getting basically 3 or 4 days free at Cedar Point. And that was just, you know, he just knew all the tricks of the trade. I don't know if you can do that nowadays anymore, but he knew how to do it back then. And he figured out driving with him was white knuckle. I used to say that all the time. I was scared to death being in a car with him. Honestly, his car also was a file cabinet on wheels because the back seat was literally media guides and Burger King wrappers, but the two of them combined. So, I mean, you know, Les was like everybody has said, he was unique. He was one of one. But I miss the guy. I really do, because he was such a big part of the fabric of Chicago sports. And he was, you know, alongside me as much as, matter of fact, I saw Les more than I saw my family most of the time. I really did.
Listening to David talk about him just brings back so many of the same memories of him driving a car with his knees and getting a different station and talking on a cell phone at the same time. Literally driving with his knees and, you know, the junk in the back seat. And it was just the thing about Les was that when he went on the air and all this stuff, this periphery stuff that was going on, He was the ultimate professional, and he ran things. He could run a whole radio station all by himself. He had bags full of equipment to be able to set up to do shows wherever he went. I've seen him. I saw him do shows in lobbies of hotels. I saw him do shows everywhere. David, tell the famous gas station story.
Well, even before that one, Bruce, I just want to echo what you're saying. I mean, Les figured out ways. I mean, I used to say, you know, he's MacGyver. I don't know how he got on the air sometimes with the antiquated equipment that he had. Yep. But he would go, you know, like when we were traveling on the road, whether with the Bulls or the Bears or whoever it was, and he would go to the business center at the hotel, and he would, I don't know, he would figure out through the copy machine or the fax machine how to get a phone line. And, you know, Mitch would, you know, go, he's not going to get on the air. I go, yeah, he'll get on the air one way or another. He'll do it. Yeah, he will. And he would, sometimes it would be at 11:59 for his midnight show, but he'd figure it out. And then he would do his show for 5 hours and I'd be upstairs. You know, I had the hotel room. He'd come upstairs at 5:15, knock on the door and, you know, crash out on the floor until like about 8 o'clock. He was like a vampire, to be honest with you. But the famous story at the gas station, we were going to play in a softball game, and we were at Wrigley Field, and we had to get up to, I don't know where we're going, to Glenview or something like that. And, we, you know, he had to do a show for LS at that time, and so it was getting close to 5 o'clock. He had to be on the air. We left Wrigley Field, yada, yada, and he goes, well, I'm going to pull in here and do the show. So I go, what do you mean you're going to do? I'll just do it on a payphone. And as I said at the funeral, if you don't know what a payphone is, just Google it. Anyway, he got out and he was doing it on some payphone. And all of a sudden, in the old days of the gas station, if you came in and you went across that strip in the gas station, you'd hear the ding, 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 ding. I don't think they have that anymore.
Yeah,
but, I know what you're talking about. He was doing it, I believe, with Tommy Edwards, and I'm sitting in the car and I'm on the floor, I'm laughing my ass off. And Tommy goes, well, Les, what is that? What's that ding ding ding? And Edwards knew where he was at. He wasn't at Wrigley. And so Les very quickly goes, Well, that was the 22 Clark Street bus that just went by, and I'm doing this right outside Wrigley Field. And you know, Edwards was laughing, and I thought I was gonna die. I was laughing so hard. Oh. So that was Les. Les was unique. I mean, and Les had the best show opening of anybody ever. I mean, the Rolling Stones and the Three Stooges, and you know, to do the shows like, and I filled in for him, and you know this as well, Mark, doing those shows for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 hours and sometimes longer, you're talking to yourself after a while. But if anybody could talk to himself better than anybody on this planet, it was Les. He could talk to himself for hours.
And this was a guy that you couldn't get to externally. You could not rattle Les.
No.
The experts, Steve Dahl, Larry Lujack, everybody that he worked with and around.
Mark Grody.
Did their very best to rattle him, to try to shake him from what he was talking about, to get him off subject. And you just could not do it. He was just that good. And the thing that stands out the most for me about Les was the respect that he had for people and the respect that he had for his listener. He had thousands of listeners, people that were disenfranchised, that were, you know, third shift people. But to him, regardless of what their level was or where they were in standing in life to other people, when they were on with Les, they were the most important person in the world, and he gave them the ultimate respect and attention, and that's why Les is still and always will be popular to the people that loved him.
That's deep, you know, man. That's so deep, David. I mean, just like, I'm going to let you go here, David, just what Bruce said, how perfectly did he put the word disenfranchised? Like, that is exactly the people that Les took on. And that doesn't mean like they're bad, because they're just a little bit off the clock that normal, that the most of us are on. So it's so beautiful.
Yeah, some of those callers are a little bit off in more ways than one. Let me tell you that. But I want to just echo with something else that Bruce said. I mean, whether it was Lujack or Edwards or even, you know, the people at Espen or the score. I mean, let's face it, Les at times was like a whipping boy because some of his antics. However, that being said, Les was in the middle of some major stories over the years that people never gave him credit for. I mean, he was there during the Super Bowl when the Bears won in 85, and he got, you know, Jim McMahon to do an exclusive interview with him. I think, what did McMahon do? I mean, he pulled his pants down and, you know, in front of the helicopter up aboard or something like that. Uh-huh. And then, you know, Les, of course, forever will be famously remembered, and Bruce knows this as well, for the Lee Elia tape, because he was the one, and I was standing there too, but I wasn't smart enough. I was laughing my butt off at Elia. The guy was doing a meltdown, but Les was smart enough to turn on his recorder, knowing that he had the rant of all times. And so, you know, Les was in the middle of some really major sports stuff over all these years.
For him to be able to have made a living doing this for 50 years is so incredible. And, you know, again, did he struggle like some of us did many times during our careers when things were not going great? Yes, he did. You never heard Les complain once about not having enough money or not having a job or needing something. Les was always there for other people, and maybe not so much for him coming back. But again, the guy to me will always be a radio legend and one of the better friends that I've ever had in the business. I mean, he was just always a good, kind person. You know, try to think along with Les, you'll get lost along the way, though.
Yeah.
You know, a couple things that I learned at the funeral that I didn't know, that one of them surprised me. One of them was that Les was a cab driver way back. And I guess I shouldn't have been surprised by that because he knew of the alley in Chicago.
Of course he was a cab driver, right?
Yeah. It was perfect. You know, I mean, like I said, driving with him was a white knuckle experience. The other thing I didn't know, that his, I believe Kathy, if not his son, also said that Les used to sing in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that sort of floored me because, I mean, let's face it, Les had a broadcasting voice, but I didn't never envision him singing like Freebird or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's hilarious. Go ahead, Bruce.
Mark, I think you personally took Les to a different level. And at times, initially, as a friend, I took exception to the initial part about you imitating him. And then I realized that you loved him just as much as we did along the way. And that even though he was being made fun of, there was respect and love for what you felt. I didn't feel it right away when you started to do
it. Interesting.
But I think as time went on, that respect and love for him helped his image grow even bigger at the station on a long way.
Well, I really appreciate you kind of letting me know that or revealing that to me, because it's always when I do impersonations, and especially with Les, I was always worried I'm probably offending, if not Les, probably the people that know him and love him. And I know that that's the chance that I take when I do those sorts of silly things. But I will say I had a conscience about it. And I do remember the first time that I felt a little bit better about it, or I guess validated maybe is the word, is I think I expressed on the radio at one point in time, like, you know, I know he's got like family out there listening and his son. And then I get a text my first ever communication with Scott Grobstein, his son, was him texting the score going, I love your impersonation of my dad. Everything you do is spot on. It's absolutely hilarious. So it was a big relief for me just to hear that and understand that, because I know I cross the line sometimes, and I know that I went into the area of making fun of him as well. But one thing I guess that I always keep in mind for myself, I grew up listening to Les and enjoying Les. And you kind of alluded to it a little bit, Bruce. He's he's a good broadcaster too. Like he makes like Les can be ridiculous, and that's what we prey on. But the man, like technically sounds good. He could do a good rap. He obviously can do 5 hours of overnight radio as well. So I think the thing that got lost a lot and was that, and I tried to express it, you know, when he died and since then, Les was a really good broadcaster, guys.
Look, David, George Hoffman and Les did millions of updates. And when I say millions, I'm probably exaggerating a little bit, but not much.
Okay? Right.
Because right. You're talking about these guys, Les being 50 years, these guys, David still works. It's approaching 45, maybe more now. George did it for 45 years. These three guys, were unique because they could go everywhere, do anything with any sport, sound good, and do updates and anything else that you wanted to do. And unfortunately, Les and David and George are not in any Radio Hall of Fame here in Chicago, which is just a travesty, okay? So I'm not getting on my horse, high horse here to promote that. All I'm going to say is, nobody knew more than these three guys. Nobody did more than these three guys. And it would bring me great joy at some point that these guys get the honors that they deserve.
Only if there's a free meal.
I know it's a piece of tin, and it's but the recognition from everybody that we worked with and worked for over the years was huge for these guys, because again, they were seamless in being able to do all of this work and do it well.
You know, Mark, I just popped into my head real quickly here. The reason you're even doing this show, I mean, let's face it, Les was a staple, obviously, at the Score and everywhere else in Chicago. Like I said earlier, I still feel Les's presence. I look around the corner. I'm just thinking, like, he's either going to pop up, or I think that if he did, what would it be like?
So again,
you know, and we talk about him. It's not just here doing this show. Les comes up in conversation often. You know, there's something always reminds me about Les. Sure. You know, sure. So I mean,
how much would Les have been just bathing in the Ring of Honor stuff and the lead up to it with Luke Longley, the Ron Harper, and Judd Bushler? He would have had just an app. I'm not talking about the boot. He would have had something to say about that. I'm just talking about, though, that's his bread and butter. He could have told everybody everything that he knows about Judd Bushler and seeing him out at Ed DeBevick's one night.
And equally, he would have been on the air for an hour just being PO'd about the Packers winning the game.
Oh my
last
God.
Night.
Yeah.
Oh, and if they would lose, that would be the whole show.
Oh. How about, Detroit and the Packers both won yesterday, Bruce. That would have sent him into hysterics, man.
Les, you know, the thing about the Ring of Honor was that he would have, as David said and as you said, he would have been giving you minutiae about every player on those teams and the travesty, like David talked about before we went on the air, of players from the 72-10 team not all being identified there.
Thanks.
But more importantly, he would have been defending Jerry Krause and all the things that he did well, at the same time admitting that, you know, like all of us, Jerry had his flaws. But he would point out all of the details about the fact that nobody knew who Phil Jackson was outside of New York until Jerry identified him and grabbed him out of the CBA as a coach. Nobody knew who Scottie Pippen was. Nobody knew who Ozzie Guillen was. Nobody knew who Tony La Russa was. These are all people that Jerry Krause found. And I'm sure Les would have been right on top of telling those stories about Krause and his ability to find people and identify talent.
And Bruce, you know, adding to that also, you know, another reason why he would have been completely in Krause's corner, because Krause was a Chicagoan through and through. Taft High School, and Les went to high school not that far from there at Von Steuben. And listen, people from Von Steuben who knew Les in high school, they could tell you some real stories, by the way.
wasn't there all that often.
Yeah, I was thinking too, somebody mentioned free food. And, you know, that's a trick that we all have. But I know Les kind of could take it to another level. He also had some
Hall
unique.
Of fame.
Oh, Hall of Fame. I definitely have to turn it over to you. My one story that I or Les creation that I always tell people about is I sat next to him in the Wrigley press box for a couple of years, I think, when I was at BBM. And I don't know, I had, you know, a cafeteria meal with me, chicken or some vegetables or a salad. And then there's Les, and he digs into his pocket, pulls out a little thing of those like Toll House crackers, takes it, you know, undoes the crackers on a little plate. Then he takes out some plasticware and a little peanut butter thing he's got. And he puts the peanut butter on one side and then he puts the jelly on the other side and eats the sandwich. And I was like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? I'm having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's free. You had to pay for yours. So that's always my point of reference.
Yeah, eating with Les was a whole nother show we could do.
Oh yeah,
that's a whole different show. And he enjoyed his food, and as you say, there were many varieties of food and many. Let's say, you know, he created some food became aged before its time. You know, and Les was a part of that, but
or fossilized.
In his pocket.
You
know,
the one thing you say right away after you say Les, or the one reaction you have after you say Les, is you laugh or you smile. Uh-huh. And what could be a better tribute to a person than that?
Yeah, most people don't get tributes. You know what I mean? Like, Les does and will continue to as long as I'm alive.
Hey, Mark, when I go, will you do a tribute show for me?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, man, I am carrying on the torch, man, for your era. And I'm no spring chicken anymore, but I got you and Bruce and George and the whole and Les. I got all you guys. Don't worry. Of course.
Do one of these. Who cares? Real quickly.
It doesn't matter. Who cares? It's the same thing every time.
See, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, or however that saying goes.
Yeah. That's what I'm always hoping, you know, so I don't get punched in the face, you know. Guys, this has been absolutely wonderful. I feel like we could just do this all night. It's been therapeutic for me. At moments, I forgot that we were actually doing something that's airing on the radio right now. So,
is this another commercial
you guys want to say before we spring you?
Yeah, is this another one of those commercial-free shows?
Yeah, Schuster, formerly of The Score, formerly of ESPN 1000. Schuster's been around and. Both those guys worked with Les a ton, and both of these guys hung out with Les too, hung out with him, you know, off air as well. So those two guys may have known Les better than any of us did. So it was no surprise to me that I had an unbelievable conversation with Bruce Levine and David Schuster. Was it you or Bruce just now that said you feel like he's going to pop back up any minute now?
I don't think there's any question. One of these days in a press box, you know, we're going to go to the back of the press box where there's food or something like that. And Les is just going to be there snarfing it down. There's no question. He's going to be there one of these days. I feel his presence. I do. I honestly do.
Do you agree with that, Bruce?
Les was such a unique character that in some ways, the animation of his life was, you know, always there. So David's right. There was nothing that was regular about Les other than having a big heart and being just a wonderful person all the way down. If there was ever a problem that anybody had or if there was anything that wasn't working in their life, Les was always there with a pat on the back, a smile, and a helping hand. He just was one of the nicest, warmest people. But when that wasn't going on, he was a robot, You know, he was just he was always on.
Yeah, he was always on. And David,
am I what was he on?
He first of all, he hated drugs. He hated alcohol. Okay, you know, he despised anything like that. He was on like Coca-Cola and whatever else. I mean, he was just, you know, he was just really an amazing individual with such a capacity for remembering things, for forgetting things, and then remembering he forgot them.
Yeah, he was Rain Man. There's no question. Leslie was definitely Rain Man. Although we had to, you know, fact checked him, and you know, we would say, Les, you weren't right about that. Oh, yeah, yes, I was. No, you really weren't right about that. And so that would be a topic of conversation to just sort of whiplash him for about a half hour on that.
All right, where I am forever going to try to figure this out, and maybe I've asked you guys this either on or off the air, and I actually don't even know exactly how to phrase the question, but I will try my best here. What made Les? Like, he is a one-of-one unique character who, to me, I always say that he never lost the spirit of his 12-year-old fan. And sometimes it was really good and helped him and was perfect. Sometimes it came across as immature with some of the things that he would say on the radio and some of the, I know you are, but what am I sort of banter that would go on with Les. But I am forever trying to figure out, like, where did it all come from?
Well, first of all, you might be exaggerating on the age. 12 might be a little bit. 12 might be a little high bar, honestly. No, I mean, listen, we both love Les. And I don't think, along with Bruce, I don't think any of anybody associated with him more than I did. I mean, I was with him in studio. I was with him in press boxes. I was with him traveling on the road, you know, softball games, what have you. So I think I, you know, knew Les about as well as anybody other than maybe people in his family or his longtime girlfriend, Kathy. You know, Les is just absolutely unique. I mean, he was everywhere. What's the character? And is it the Woody Allen movie, Bruce Zelig, or whoever it is? You know, the person who's always everywhere. You know, that was Les. Les was unique. He got to places that I don't know how he got to, meaning traveling. I mean, he would go. He must have had enough. As I said, you know, even during his eulogy, he must have had enough. I'm laughing in advance. He had enough frequent flyer miles to go to Pluto, his favorite planet. Oh, it wasn't a planet for him. Sorry.
So the best day of Les's life, other than his son being born, was I remember him covering a early game in Milwaukee, the White Sox and Brewers, and then a Cub game later on in the day, an early evening game. But I do remember him saying that he covered three games in one day, okay, including a Bulls game. And he did a voicer from all three events. So White Sox game in Milwaukee, Cub game at home, and a basketball game at Chicago Stadium. But that was the best day of Les's life that he could say he did that. And he reveled in the fact that he could be at three places one day. I mean, I've never seen more joy for him than being able to do that. The guy went through cars like, I don't know, he would put on $40,000 miles a year sometimes. Him. He was perpetual motion.
Yeah, he was. Again, the frequent flyer miles traveling around the country. I don't think he ever paid a dime for any airline. He taught me things, you know, and you as well, Bruce. He taught us how to, I hate to use the terminology, but to take advantage of, you know, of the landscape, you know, to travel for as little, if not no money at all. I mean, one of my all-time stories was, and this is when my children were real young, and I was going to, what's the roller coaster park in Ohio by Cleveland?
Cedar Point.
Cedar Point, right. And I said, Les, I'm, you know, taking off about 3 days. I'm going to go to Cedar Point, you know, with my kids. He goes, well, are you paying anything? I go, well, yeah, I guess I am. Well, why? He goes, well, yeah. You know, and he got on the phone and he called up the place and he said, my friend, and I was working at ESPN at the time. He goes, my friend is coming and he's going to do a story on Cedar Point, yada, yada, yada. And he talked it into me getting basically 3 or 4 days free at Cedar Point. And that was just, you know, he just knew all the tricks of the trade. I don't know if you can do that nowadays anymore, but he knew how to do it back then. And he figured out driving with him was white knuckle. I used to say that all the time. I was scared to death being in a car with him. Honestly, his car also was a file cabinet on wheels because the back seat was literally media guides and Burger King wrappers, the two of them combined. So, I mean, you know, Les was like everybody has said, he was unique. He was one of one, but I miss the guy. I really do, because he was such a big part of the fabric of Chicago sports. And he was, you know, alongside me as much as, matter of fact, I saw Les more than I saw my family most of the time. I really did.
Listening to David talk about him just brings back so many of the same memories of him driving a car with his knees and getting a different station and talking on a cell phone at the same time, literally driving with his knees and, you know, the junk in the back seat. And it was just the thing about Les was that when he went on the air and all this stuff, this periphery stuff that was going on, he was the ultimate professional, and he ran things. He could run a whole radio station all by himself. He had bags full of equipment to be able to set up to do shows wherever he went. I've seen him. I saw him do shows in lobbies of hotels. I saw him do shows everywhere. David, tell the famous gas station story.
Well, even before that one, Bruce, I just want to echo what you're saying. I mean, Les figured out ways. I mean, I used to say, you know, he's MacGyver. I don't know how he got on the air sometimes with the antiquated equipment that he had. Yeah. But he would go, you know, like we were traveling on the road, whether with the Bulls or the Bears or whoever it was. And he would go to the business center at the hotel and he would, I don't know, he would figure out through the copy machine or the fax machine how to get a phone line. And, you know, Mitch would, you know, go, he's not going to get on the air. I go, yeah, he'll get on the air one way or another. He'll do it. Yeah, he will. And he would, sometimes it would be at 11:59 for his midnight show, but he'd figure it out. And then he would do his show for 5 hours and I'd be upstairs. You know, I had the hotel room. He'd come upstairs at 5:15, knock on the door and, you know, crash out on the floor until like about 8 o'clock. He was like a vampire, to be honest with you. But the famous story at the gas station, we were going to play in a softball game and we were at Wrigley Field and we had to get up to, I don't know where we're going, to Glenview or something like that. And we, you know, he had to do a show for LS at that time. And so it was getting close to 5 o'clock. He had to be on the air. We left Wrigley Field, yada, yada. And he goes, well, I'm going to pull in here and do the show. So I go, what do you mean you're going to do? I'll just do it on a payphone. And as I said at the funeral, if you don't know what a payphone is, just Google it. Anyway, he got out and he was doing it on some payphone. And all of a sudden, in the old days of the gas station, if you came in and you went across that strip in the gas station, you'd hear the ding, 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 ding. I don't think they have that anymore.
Yeah,
but, I know what you're talking about. He was doing it, I believe, with Tommy Edwards, and I'm sitting in the car and I'm on the floor, I'm laughing my ass off. And Tommy goes, well, Les, what is that? What's that ding ding ding? And Edwards knew where he was at. He wasn't at Wrigley. And so Les very quickly goes, Well, that was the 22 Clark Street bus that just went by, and I'm doing this right outside Wrigley Field. And you know, Edwards was laughing, and I thought I was gonna die. I was laughing so hard. Oh. So that was Les. I mean, Les was just unique. I mean, and Les had the best show opening of anybody ever. I mean, the Rolling Stones and the Three Stooges, and you know, to do the shows like, and I filled in for him, and you know this as well, Mark. Uh-huh. Doing those shows for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 hours, and sometimes longer, you're talking to yourself after a while. But if anybody could talk to himself better than anybody on this planet, it was Les. He could talk to himself for hours.
And you, this was a guy that you couldn't get to externally. You could not rattle Les.
No.
The experts, Steve Dahl, Larry Lujack, everybody that he worked with and around.
Mark Grody.
did their very best to rattle him, to try to shake him from what he was talking about, to get him off subject, and you just could not do it. He was just that good. And the thing that stands out the most for me about Les was the respect that he had for people and the respect that he had for his listener. He had thousands of listeners, people that were disenfranchised, that were, you know, third shift people. But to him, regardless of what their level was or where they were in standing in life to other people, when they were on with Les, they were the most important person in the world, and he gave them the ultimate respect and attention, and that's why Les is still and always will be popular to the people that loved him.
That's deep, you know, man. That's so deep, David. I mean, just like, I'm going to let you go here, David, or talk, I said, but just what Bruce said, how perfectly did he put the word disenfranchised? Like, that is exactly the people that Les took on. And that doesn't mean like they're bad, because they're just a little bit off the clock that normal, that the most of us are on. So it's so beautiful.
Some of those callers are a little bit off in more ways than one. Let me tell you that. But I want to just echo with something else that Bruce said. I mean, whether it was Lujack or Edwards, or even, you know, the people at ESPN, or the score, I mean, let's face it, Les at times was like a whipping boy because some of his antics. However, that being said, Les was in the middle of some major stories over the years that people never gave him credit for. I mean, he was there during the Super Bowl when the Bears won in 85, and he got, you know, Jim McMahon to do an exclusive interview with him. I think, what did McMahon do? I mean, he pulled his pants down and, you know, in front of the helicopter up aboard or something like that. Uh-huh. And then, you know, Les, of course, forever will be famously remembered, and Bruce knows this as well, for the Lee Elia tape, because he was the one, and I was standing there too, but I wasn't smart enough. I was laughing my butt off at Elia. The guy was doing a meltdown, but Les was smart enough to turn on his recorder, knowing that he had the rant of all times. And so, you know, Les was in the middle of some really major sports stuff over all these years.
For him to be able to have made a living doing this for 50 years is so incredible. And, you know, again, did he struggle like some of us did many times during our careers when things were not going great? Yes, he did. You never heard Les complain once about not having enough money or not having a job or needing something. Les was always there for other people, and maybe not so much for him coming back. But again, the guy to me will always be a radio legend and one of the better friends that I've ever had in the business. I mean, he was just always a good, kind person. You know, try to think along with Les, you'll get lost along the way, though.
A couple things that I learned at the funeral that I didn't know, that neither one, well, one of them surprised me. One of them was that Les was a cab driver way, way, way back. And I guess I shouldn't have been surprised by that, because he knew Heavy Alley in Chicago.
Of course he was a cab driver, right?
Yeah. It was perfect. You know, I mean, like I said, driving with him was a white knuckle experience. The other thing I didn't know, that his, I believe, Kathy, if not his son, also said that Les used to sing in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that sort of floored me, because, I mean, let's face it, Les had a broadcasting voice, but I didn't ever envision him singing like Freebird or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's hilarious. Go ahead, Bruce.
Mark, I think you personally took Les to a different level. And at times, initially, as a friend, I took exception to the initial part about you imitating him. And then I realized that you loved him just as much as we did along the way. And that even though he was being made fun of, there was respect and love for what you felt. I didn't feel it right away when you started to do
it. Interesting.
But I think as time went on, that respect and love for him helped him, his image grow even bigger at the station on along the way.
Well, that's really, I really appreciate you kind of letting me know that or revealing that to me, because it's always when I do impersonations, and especially with Les, I was always worried I'm probably offending, if not Les, probably the people that know him and love him. And I know that that's the chance that I take when I do those sorts of silly things. But I will say, I had a conscience about it. And I do remember the first time that I felt a little bit better about it, or I guess validated maybe is the word, is I think I expressed on the radio at one point in time, like, you know, I know he's got like family out there listening and his son. And then I get a text from, for the first, my first ever communication with Scott Grobstein, his son, was him texting the score going, I love your impersonation of my dad. Everything you do is spot on. It's absolutely hilarious. So it was a big relief for me just to hear that and understand that, because I know I cross the line sometimes, and I know that I went into the area of making fun of him as well. But one thing I guess that I always keep in mind for myself, I grew up listening to Les and enjoying Les, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit, Bruce. He's a good broadcaster too. Like he makes it, like Les can be ridiculous, and that's what we prey on. But the man, like technically sounds good. He could do a good rap. He obviously can do 5 hours of overnight radio as well. So I think the thing that got lost a lot and was that, and I tried to express it, you know, when he died and since then, Les was a really good broadcaster, guys.
Look, David, George Hoffman and Les did millions of updates. And when I say millions, I'm probably exaggerating a little bit, but not much.
Okay. Right.
Because you're talking about these guys, Les being 50 years, these guys, David still works. It's approaching 45, maybe more now. George did it for 45 years. These three guys, were unique because they could go everywhere, do anything with any sport, sound good, and do updates and anything else that you wanted to do. And unfortunately, Les and David and George are not in any Radio Hall of Fame here in Chicago, which is just a travesty, okay? So I'm not getting on my high horse here to promote that. All I'm going to say is, nobody knew more than these three guys. Nobody did more than these three guys. And it would bring me great joy at some point that these guys get the honors that they deserve.
Only if there's a free meal.
I know it's a piece of tin, and it's but the recognition from everybody that we worked with and worked for over the years was huge for these guys, because again, they were seamless in being able to do all of this work and do it well.
You know, Mark, I just popped into my head real quickly here. Sure. The reason you're even doing this show, I mean, let's face it, Les was a staple, obviously, at the Score and everywhere else in Chicago. Like I said earlier, I still feel Les's presence. I look around the corner. I'm just thinking, like, he's either going to pop up, or I think that if he did, what would it be like? So and we talk about him. It's not just here doing this show. Les comes up in conversation often. You know, that something always reminds me about Les. Sure. You know, sure. So I mean,
how about
a legacy?
How much would Les have been just bathing in the Ring of Honor stuff and the lead up to it with Luke Longley, the Ron Harper, and of Judd Bushler? He would have had just an apt. I'm not talking about the boot. Like, he would have had something to say about that. I'm just talking about, though, that's his bread and butter. He could have told everybody everything that he knows about Judd Bushler and seeing him out at Ed Bevick's one night.
And equally, he would have been on the air for an hour just being PO'd about the Packers winning the game
last night.
Yeah. Oh, and if they would lose, that would be the whole show.
Oh, how about, Detroit and the Packers both won yesterday, Bruce. That would have sent him into hysterics, man.
Les, the thing about the Ring of Honor was that he would have, as David said and as you said, he would have been giving you minutiae about every player on those teams and the travesty, like David talked about before we went on the air, of players from the from the 72-10 team not all being identified there.
Thanks.
But more importantly, he would have been defending Jerry Krause and all the things that he did well. At the same time, admitting that, you know, like all of us, Jerry had his flaws, but he would point out all of the details about the fact that nobody knew who Phil Jackson was outside of New York until Jerry identified him and grabbed him out of the CBA as a coach. Nobody knew who Scottie Pippen was. Nobody knew who Ozzie Guillen was. Nobody knew who Tony La Russa was. These are all people that Jerry Krause found. And I'm sure Les would have been right on top of telling those stories about Krause and his ability to find people and identify talent.
And Bruce, you know, adding to that also, you know, another reason why he would have been completely in Krause's corner, because Krause was a Chicagoan through and through, half high school, and Les went to high school not that far from there at Von Steuben. And listen, people from Von Steuben who knew Les in high school, they could tell you some real stories, by the way.
wasn't there all that often.
Yeah. I was thinking too, somebody mentioned free food. And, you know, that's a trick that we all have. But I know Les kind of could take it to another level. He also had some Hall of Fame. I definitely am going to turn it over to you. My one story that or Les creation that I always tell people about is I sat next to him in the Wrigley press box for a couple of years, I think, when I was at BBM. And I don't know, I had, you know, a cafeteria meal with me, chicken or some vegetables or a salad. And then there's Les, and he digs into his pocket, pulls out a little thing of those like Toll House crackers, takes it, you know, undoes the crackers on a little plate. Then he takes out some plasticware and a little peanut butter thing he's got. And he puts the peanut butter on one side and then he puts the jelly on the other side and eats the sandwich. And I was like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? I'm having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's free. You had to pay for yours. So that's always my point of reference.
Yeah, eating with Les was a whole nother show we could do.
Oh yeah,
that's a whole different show. And he enjoyed his food, and as you say, there were many varieties of food and many. Let's say, you know, he created some food became aged before its time. You know, and Les was a part of that, but
or fossilized.
In his pocket.
You
know,
the one thing you say right away after you say Les, or the one reaction you have after you say Les, is you laugh or you smile. Uh-huh. And what could be a better tribute to a person than that?
Yeah, most people don't get tributes. You know what I mean? Like Les does and will continue to as long as I'm alive.
Hey, Mark, when I go, will you do a tribute show for me?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, man, I am carrying on the torch, man, for your era. And I'm no spring chicken anymore, but I got you and Bruce and George and the whole and Les. I got all you guys. Don't worry. Of course.
Do one of these. Who cares? Real quickly.
It doesn't matter. Who cares? It's the same thing every time.
See, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, or however that saying goes.
Yeah. That's what I'm always hoping, you know, so I don't get punched in the face, you know. Guys, this has been absolutely wonderful. I feel like we could just do this all night. It's been therapeutic for me. At moments, I forgot that we were actually doing something that's airing on the radio right now. So,
is this another commercial
you guys want to say before we spring you?
Yeah, is this another one of those commercial-free shows?
Yeah.